are prohibited. For more details, visit discoverygreen.com.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings, welcome to Technology Bites.
Slytherin.
Ah, yes, yes, it's, we're flying in many missing geek formations.
We're missing Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw.
Anybody named, anyone with Lee in their name? Not here.
Not here.
So that's why you tune in. Then you need to go to Newfoundland and find out what it's all about. No, you are listening to Technology Bites. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett. And he's
Groovehouse.
For everybody
There's
else.
Nobody here.
Thank you. Thank you, Barrett.
Yeah, You're welcome. You're welcome.
None of us here.
That was kind of weird doing it right after I did that, but, you know, I'm there for you, man.
I appreciate that.
So, yes, Jay is out of town, and Lee is
out of health.
Indisposed. He's he's not available.
Out of immune
He's
system.
He's not here, man. So there's the rest of us.
B-Team. Benchwarmers. Pete's original, though.
This is the lineup that I like to call Pete and the Introverts.
I'm really glad we've got Flicted, though, because I think he's going to be able to, you know, kind of step up and carry the show today.
Yeah, he looks like he's got a lot to say tonight. And
he would be talking right now if he had his headphones on and was paying attention to the show, although I think he can hear us in there.
His thing is more on-screen kind of stuff, and
I think he's trying to connect to different groups. We're trying to see. It might be an F Society type situation.
There you go. There you go. He's.
What's the army? What's the name of the army?
The Dark Army.
The White Army. Or is the Dark Army. That's so lame. It should be like a better army than the Dark Army.
Yeah, that's.
But the Dark Army's kind of like, okay. Da 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 da. It wasn't it. That almost sounds like, yeah, da da. Not to be all Slytherin and the whole, you know, the Slithery thing. But yeah, the Defense Against the Dark Arts is what it sounds like. That's. They need a better name.
Oh, you know, all the Hogwarts houses things are so. So last week, because now we know the houses from J.K. Rowling for the American school.
No, is this for real?
She posted the you know, there's the movie coming. There's that movie coming that's the Fantastic Creatures and How to Find Them.
No, I'm completely in the dark on all this.
Okay, that's they. I think there's at least two films. I think it may be three. Set in kind of the 20s. And it's Fantastic Creatures and How to Find Them, and it's a British wizard comes to America in the 20s,
and he sets up schools. Is,
he's here to look for some particular, I guess, American creatures for his book.
Okay,
and because there was, you know, if you're a real Harry Potter nut, there were all kinds of extra. There were extra little books that she had. There was
more like compendiums, though, wasn't it?
Quidditch. Yeah. There were little side books that she put out for charitable things.
Yeah, and then like all the bedtime stories that were mentioned, she actually put those out, I believe.
Yeah,
I know
and
a little
then there
bit.
Was one that was Fantastic Creatures and How to Find Them, and now I'm blanking on the name of the character that wrote them. Oh, Newt Scamander, and it's about him coming here. So it's got that kind of period piece look to it. There's trailers if you go look. It's pretty
I just
impressive.
Want to know the names of the American houses. Are they going to be like Hot Dog and Lazy Boy?
Oh, yeah.
Ford Fairlane. It's one of the houses. House Ford.
And the Bears.
Yeah. The Bears.
Or the Cowboys. What house are you in?
Ditka's the head of the house.
No, it's...
I am curious now. Is this for real?
It's like... It's real. I read it on Pottermore, so.
You follow the boards?
No. They sent me. I haven't been in so long. They sent me one of those emails like,
"We miss
hey,
you.
You know, you can reclaim your wand and your house."
Oh, they should have sent you an owl.
And so, it's like Puckwudgie or something, and Wampus.
As in Cattywampus.
I don't remember the other ones, the other two.
Thunderbird,
there you
Wampus.
Go. What's the word? Thunderbird, that's the drinking house.
T-Bird. Oh, I wonder if she didn't know. Horned Serpent. So that's also, that's got some other, you know, possible uses. And then the very first one is the Puckwudgie.
Puckwudgie.
And, a little bit like wedgie.
And
but,
then
okay.
the little known
probably a Native American.
Then there was one that's a smaller school that was for the Jewish community in New York City, and their house was Mogan David. Just kidding. That's totally me. Obviously, J.K. Rowling doesn't have the kind of connection to American history, obviously, and feel for the place that she does to British history. And so I think that's why why it wasn't quite as
Surely she can afford some consultants at this point.
well, except then you're going to get something that sounds like it was made by consultants, which is going to get up.
Team Synergy, House Synergy.
Yeah, there you go.
House Cloud.
So
Flicked, you're sorted into House Cloud.
Anyways, I guess giving you the basic information about the show, you can go to geekradio.com. That is a great place to find things out, like especially about something that I will sadly not be present for this Friday, which is the first Friday of the month, which it comes before the first Saturday. So there is some kind of something that goes with that. I think maybe that it's the mini moon and there's some other thing in there, but you have to ask Flicted about that.
It's not after the first Thursday, though.
But right. But there's the Geek Gathering.
Yeah, if you show up the Friday after the first Thursday,
you're out of luck.
Probably nobody else will be there from the show.
It'll be a very different. If you start talking about computers and stuff, you'll get a very different look. They won't have that like excited. Hey, really? Look, they'll have more of that like. Hipster,
this man is bothering me.
Hipster.
And then you'll go. Hey, wait. Come back. Yamame!
So there's the Geek Gathering, and there's like maps and pictures. There's a picture of what to expect when you get there.
On our page? I might go visit
on the
site.
Front page, as prepared by...
Oh, I've seen that picture. Yeah, is it bathing suit weather already?
Don't let that scare you away.
Bathing suit's optional.
And there's links to all the different articles and such that we talk about during the show tonight. So if you've got one of those where it's like, hey, there was that thing you were talking about that had that story about whatever, you can actually go and usually by the headlines you can tell pretty well what we were talking about or where we got it. And so that way you can check up on us and then, I don't know, in the comments you can flame people and have all kinds of fights and all that fun stuff that's the reason you're on the internet in the first place. You can also get on IRC,
IRC's
show within a show. We're in channel Pound Tech Bytes.
On irc.cuckoo.com or is it .net? Where are we? Are we
yes.
on the .nets?
Yes.
.net.
Both.
Try them both.
Both work?
I don't know. I think so.
One gets you on the government watch list, and the other one gets you chat with
I know IRC Cuckoo.com works. I don't know about
Cuckoo.
.net, but I would
just do irc.cuckoo.com. Or find us on the dark web at... No. We've got an onion address, don't we? Yeah, we do. No, we don't. We might.
Yes. So there's that.
That's the dark version of our show, where we talk about things we don't talk about on this show.
The funny yes. part is, on the dark version of the show, all of them are clean shaven.
Actually, the dark version, we're totally above board. No. We're like, hey guys, have you guys played Tetris or Minesweeper? Isn't that great?
If we were in the Star Trek alternate universe, though, all of our evil doppelgangers would be clean shaven and use
a lot of like manager babble.
And many of them.
I can't wait till that upgrade to Windows 10 second
slender, slender and fit.
If you want to monetize your,
if you want to monetize your Windows 10 upgrade stream, try this. Find me on LinkedIn.
Your friendly SEO.
So let's see. I've said about the website,
geekradio.com,
IRC.
Dark web.
Am I missing something? Anything else?
Just the Lees.
Yeah, we're missing the Lees by the Lee.
Definitely.
Staggerly.
Miserably.
So did anybody go catch any of the, you know, we're starting to get, it's now summer blockbuster season, and we are coming up on the 4th of July weekend.
No, although I sense that this is another time to talk about Mr. Robot, seeing as how Pete just got caught up. Pete was binge-watching.
Totally
you're not caught up yet.
I've been binge-watching. I'm about three, I think I'm on episode 7.
Okay.
Either 7 or 8, so I'm getting there. I you know, it's nice to see, I see what people like in it, especially, I mean, the kind of more realism of it to, on the exploits and stuff.
I've seen it kind of through twice a little bit. The first time I watched it, mainly, I watched the first few episodes very intently, and then it became kind of like I was coding, so it was like background noise, so I kind of knew what was going on. I was like, hold on, what happened here? But I was catching the tech stuff, so I paused it on the tech stuff and the command line stuff, but missed a lot of the plot line and the storyline. But I got a chance on my last trip with some downtime to actually go watch it intently, and it's pretty good. Like, even if you don't know tech, I think the storyline could be fairly good, maybe. I like the tech
side. Can you Bluetooth hack a police car? Are they using Bluetooth keyboards in them?
What was he trying to do with that? They do have Bluetooth keyboards, yeah.
He was trying to get to the desktop computer of that officer.
Over a VPN? Or over what, I wonder?
I'm trying to remember now what he was trying to use. Because I thought he was using like a ham radio.
No, I thought he was trying to get to his cell, go through his cell phone, or was it the actual?
No, he.
No, no. The
first, his Bluetooth, his keyboard as the Bluetooth keyboard.
Oh yeah. Oh no, that actually, that's completely real. In fact, so that's one of the things you can do: Bluetooth injection attacks and take over keyboards and do keystrokes. So now the big thing now is, so here's the deal: you don't see a lot of Bluetooth keyboards in the wild. Like, you go to a coffee shop, not a lot of Bluetooth keyboards. What do you see? You see a lot of Bluetooth mice. So at this year's DEF CON, yay! There's a talk that more or less lets you inject HID keyboard strokes over a Bluetooth mouse.
Awesome.
Which is cool, because before it's like you had to find someone with a Bluetooth keyboard to actually be able to use that attack. Now a mouse works too.
Nice. So now you can feel good with your Bluetooth mouse at the... So the people who laughed at you for your wired mouse at the coffee shop, then you can go inject them with your stuff. So
yeah, I'm going to start, I think, taking wired mouses to the coffee shops and then running Ethernet from home.
There you go.
Not Cat 6, so that'd be expensive.
Did you not see the DEF CON talk a year or two ago where somebody injected I think it was an Arduino-based, might have been Raspberry Pi-based, basically like inline packet capture.
You mean actually on like the wire?
Like on the wire.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
So they basically designed this thing so that they could go into like a data center or whatever. Mm-hmm. You clamp it in on the two sides.
Oh,
right.
Okay, yeah.
Without affecting data. I mean, they might get like a minor blip or whatever.
If you've got a $30,000 Fluke machine, you might see an attenuation change, yeah.
Yeah, but they get it on both sides, and then you can leave it like that, and then then you can clip the real wire, and now it's just going through that device. So then you can inject stuff. So they were doing it on cameras.
Yes,
so
I did
they were
see
doing
that.
On cameras.
Yeah.
They were capturing. They were figuring out what the traffic was over the wire, figuring out like the camera how it sent the picture, capturing picture to get video stream, and then they fed it back.
Ocean's 11, anyone? Or
yeah.
Actually, just about any movie
yeah.
that robbed a bank. Or
so
did
they fed it back
years.
into the thing. So at first it was a pass through. They were capturing data, and then they told it to play this file back as the data stream and stop sending the real data. So it was, you know, this time period, and they were able to like ghost the area where the clock was and inject the correct clock. So it looked like it was a live stream with the correct time and date stamp correctly moving on it.
No, they weren't pushing all that from the Raspberry Pi, were they? Or was it like a BeagleBone Black? So I would think for that kind of video, that would take a little bit of power.
It was recorded.
Okay. So
it was just feeding back into the stream.
Yeah.
They weren't literally streaming video. It was just through the wire. And then they had a file that they were playing back off of a media card, I think, that was on
Which means that the time had to be, that when they injected it, it had to be fairly close so that the clock was correct. That's not quite as cool as
I'm
being able
to remember.
Do it in, like, where you can set the clock to the real time.
It's been a while since I saw that talk. So I can't remember if they did it in real time. And they were just injecting back the clock back into it, or how they did it. But they set up a little thing and they made an Ocean 11 reference and had a camera on like a little safe. And then they like did it. And then the other guy was talking, he was like safe cracking the safe and broke it and had like some like little coins in it or something.
I saw this, yes.
Now see, I think the better use for that is to hack into various security cameras that are just showing, you know, boring stuff and inject like aliens
Godzilla
walking
Benny Hill
or you know, just random stuff that looks like it could be real but maybe isn't.
Dancing baby.
I was I don't know if any of you have played Last of Us, the video game. It's PlayStation 4 exclusive, I think. I got it. I played it on PlayStation 3, and then they remastered it for PlayStation 4, and it looks amazing in PlayStation 4. But the thing, and the reason, this is not a commercial for it, but I'm going through it on Grounded, which is where they don't give you much in the way of ammo or weapons
anything.
Or
you have to kill
anything.
People with twigs
so you have to
and
kill,
dirt.
You have to choke them out. Most of them, you have to sneak up behind them and choke them, but. Anyways, I was there's a character. There's no spoiler to this. There's one of the characters named Ellie, and it's a young girl. And I, in this one sequence, I was hanging back because, you know, when in the Grounded one, you're like looking for every, you know, scrap of, you know, oh look, I found a piece of thread, kind of, you know, to maybe this will be useful later. So you're looking for any kind of hidden or, you know, any stuff you can use. So I hung back, so I was following her, and they're like walking through this kind of gully thing, and there was this like cement pipe that went across it. And I guess the idea was she was supposed to be behind you so you wouldn't see it. And I'm walking behind her, and she suddenly goes to where her arms are apart and her legs are together, and she like hovers through, passes through the concrete thing to the other side, and then starts running. And you kind of go, okay, what?
That was creepy.
Oh, it was. Well, yeah, it was just weird because I'm like following her. She's walking along, and suddenly it's like through the thing, and then she's running like normal again, and it's like, wow, you know. If only we knew this earlier, you could have just phased through all the levels and we'd be done, you know. But it was just really – usually you don't see them – most of the time they'll just blink somebody to someplace else. And so I don't know why they bothered to, like, have the thing continue her to be in the right position – you know, in the right coordinates or whatever and do that, because it just you know, that's one of those I just wonder how that ended up in there. But anyway, so putting in those kind of weird glitches into like real life video so that the guy who has to like look through it sometime sees an alien. Maybe you take the footage of that guy. I don't know if you saw that in England where he made the like alien costume. He had the kind of predator look costume. So he was up on, he had stuff that he was on his feet. Like they sometimes people use them, like the furries use them to have where their legs go the opposite digigrade, I guess they call it, the opposite direction. He had this like this, so he's like looks huge in it, and he's just, it's surveillance cameras in England, and so it's this sleepy town that nothing happens, and he's in the square, and he just walks through, and it's you know what the deal is because you've read the article and you're looking at the video. It still was creepy as heck. And then the cops, you know, show up, of course, because they spotted it. And you know, is it a crime to be weird out in the square on screen? But if you took that, you have that kind of thing and just put in a little bit of it, or do the, you know, do the like single frame, the static single frame with the like creepy girl in it, or whatever on people's security cameras would be.
Fight Club, whatever. Yeah.
yeah, like Cinderella something like that. Or something. But
I do like the idea of real-time video manipulation, though. I think that's where things are going, where you can't trust anymore. It's going to take a while, though, to where you can have something so small that fits in there. But I bet you the governments are doing it at this point.
Bluetooth thought injection.
Well, they've got the thing now to where they can, you know, they can record enough footage, you know, like, you know, I guess 3D footage of, like, you know, say, like, George Bush or Michael Jackson or somebody. And then, no, have you guys seen this? It's kind of cool. So they get all this video, they digitize it more or less to where they have the entire speech patterns of this person and the facial expressions and things like that. Then they take another actor, they film the actor, and then more or less in real time,
map their head onto their body.
The head, and they can have this complete
like
avatar.
In, Running Man, they had the, like, the what was it, traveling mat or something.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, like that. But I mean, they're actually able to do this now to where you could actually, you know, come in, intercept a political kind of advertisement.
Maybe they did that for Mr. Robot.
Ooh.
Because the new, like, you know, preview commercials for Mr. Robot has...
I've been trying to stay away from
this. It's a preview. It's a preview for the second season. It doesn't really tell you anything. But it's got Obama talking, and I'm assuming it's a real speech, but he's talking, and he's like, we now know that F Society was behind these hacks, blah, blah, blah.
No. So that's cut up. So that they'd use the same technique.
I'm sure they
cut
some up.
Same technique.
But then... Yeah, I'm sure they spliced it some, but I'm wondering if they maybe didn't use that also to get parts of it.
Yeah, I think they probably did. Because, I mean, they're using all these real hacker tools and all these real tech tools. I wouldn't be surprised if someone said, hey, let's do this. I'm curious. Let's go find out.
Because he didn't go, you know, like, he didn't, I mean, it didn't look spliced when he was talking, right? So he's talking, he's like, you know, and it's not like...
You can
like
tell it's the inflection.
He didn't go... We now know it was F. So, Saya, D.
Yeah. It wasn't the equivalent of the George H.W. Bush, we will rock you, where they took the words out of his speeches and made the...
Buddy Problem Tree says the word society, so they could have just, you know, put him saying the word F and the word society and put it together, and maybe the mouth doesn't move completely right with it, but it looks pretty good. I mean, I didn't watch it really closely, though.
Yeah, well, because you know it's sort of it's a commercial. It's going to fly by. You know that if that's the only little piece.
But they have it online. I mean, you can watch it over and over.
Just stutter the first part of society and just have that look like you said F. But cool. Well, I guess maybe we should proceed. You know, we got to get done, so I'm not talking at 8:32 when the.
Are you going to say?
You're going to drop out. Where'd Pete go?
Are you going to say, take it away yourself?
I'll take it away. Push the button. What does Jay say? Why don't you do it, Flicted? You do it so well.
Take
BJ
it away,
Lee.
Info snot.
Now we'll go to San Antonio.
And back.
But nobody's there, so we left a message. And now we came back. And Peter's actually here. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, the tougher thing is I'm gonna have to set up to play the other bumpers from my machine here because I haven't connected.
I don't have any of those.
The other, you may have heard about this. It's been all over the news, and you'll understand in a second why it's been covered by a lot of the media. Apparently, there's lots of wailing and gnashing of teeth because Facebook tweaked its algorithm for the news feed this morning. Apparently, they make changes all the time, but this one got a lot of attention for two reasons. One is it's supposed to make your family's news and your people that your friends, their personal type posts go higher in your feed, and media people's posts, media type postings will be less emphasized, I guess would be that, obviously it's algorithmic, so it's kind of hard to say what, to describe it, but essentially they're going to prioritize stuff that comes from your family and friends, and they're going to deprioritize, so you have to go farther into your feed before you're going to see, articles from the New York Times or NPR, unless, of
course,
prioritize
advertising, right? No.
Unless your relatives are posting, when they're posting the meme thing, so if you thought that was going to get, that uncle that posts the Fox News story of the day or whatever. Yeah, no, that person posting that, that's different. That's as opposed to if you followed the Fox News page, then that's the one that's going to be de-emphasized. So the reason that it's been covered extensively is because the companies that are reporting on it, I was listening to NPR earlier today on the news, they were reporting on it because they're affected. They have a relationship with Facebook and all. Apparently part of the deal is that Facebook felt like that they had over-prioritized the feed, media, the publisher feeds. And the other thing was that it sounds like people were, that it meant people were posting less. And so, of course, the simple business model of Facebook, if you really, you can look at all the distractions around it and all that. The real deal of Facebook is the longer you spend looking at Facebook and posting and doing stuff with Facebook, the more money the Facebook company makes. And so they're trying to find that balance where you're going to be engaged and they also get the money from the publishers and stuff, but they want you to stay on there and see the ads and all that kind of stuff.
Is that one of those scenarios where if you look around and you can't tell what the product is they're selling, it's probably you?
Yeah, really. It's your personal info. Well, and the headline on Wired News captures it pretty well, I think. It says, your Facebook echo chamber just got a whole lot louder. They say, the newsfeed has long been an echo chamber, but at least the door to that chamber was open a crack. This change all but closes it. It could devastate the publishing industry. According to Parsley, Facebook provided 39% of inbound traffic referrals in the publishing industry, placing it well ahead of Google. But you don't need studies to see how Facebook charts the course others must follow. No one really bothered with live video until Facebook Live. I don't know if I agree with that one. There was live video that the Twit Live and that kind of stuff. That was years ago that they were, you know, that you could have that. I remember getting those tweets from Dwight where he was going to live stream something.
Yeah, what was that? Q something? What did you say it was?
Kix. There was Kix and then Twit Live,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, Dwight had the, didn't he have the, was that the Kix thing that he could record and upload directly to Kix? Or
yeah,
was that something, was that another
could,
service?
Where it could sort of live stream it,
yeah.
But, you and, know, so I don't know that,
the
that...
people doing Periscope, which is live video. Yeah. Like, they just did that because of that Capitol Hill sit-in or whatever, right?
That, oh, that's right, when C-SPAN had to cut over to that. Yeah,
yeah, they're saying no one really bothered with live video until Facebook Live. Okay, well, we can debate the value of that statement. Now everyone's creating videos until Facebook loses interest or stops paying publishers big bucks to participate.
Nobody really used the internet until Facebook.
Yeah, didn't you cover a story like where, you know, was it like last week, the week before, yeah. where the main CEO said, or one of the main VPs said that, look, you know, Facebook's going to be all video in 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
you can't search video.
Well, but I mean, nobody looked at pictures until Facebook.
I didn't even really use the internet until Facebook. You're right. Or actually, no, that was more Al Gore. You turned me on to it.
Yeah, they're saying. Let's see, it was the same story with instant articles. A few outlets expressed interest in publishing directly to the platform until Facebook all but forced them to. Let's see, the Facebook representative. What's his name? Lars Backstrom, Facebook engineering director.
Man, that's not fair. He gets to have a fake name and Groovehouse can't.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. That sounds totally, totally made up.
His comment that, quote, this update may cause reach and referral traffic to decline for some pages. That's the dry way of saying you might not get anybody coming to your site no mo. Stirred up more than a little despair among publishers. But that, you know, that does have an effect on them. So if you were liking the stories that were popping up in your feed, then you're going to have to look more closely. Let's see. One thing, Facebook's problem with presenting news stories is that users sometimes assume that any perceived biases in the content reflected parallel bias on Facebook's part. Look no further than Gizmodo's report that the editors in charge of Facebook's trending module shape the stories that are shared and which news sources are considered reliable. There was a big backlash on that. You know, and the big non-surprise in all of this is that the stories people most want to see tend to be the stories that reinforce their beliefs. A review of 10.1 million Facebook accounts in the U.S. confirmed that and found that Facebook's algorithms suppress opposing content at a lower rate than a user's own choices. It's inevitable that changing the algorithm to favor posts by friends and family will further limit your exposure to opposing viewpoints and perspectives. Obviously, they haven't seen my family's postings on Facebook because it's pretty well
mine
all over the map.
Mine are kind of over the map, yeah.
It hasn't led to any, like, tense Thanksgiving dinners, but I could see where the potential is there. It gets tough because essentially everybody has some bias in them. And so as the internet acts as an amplifier for your own communication, it's going to amplify your biases too, or it's going to present them. So
echo chamber.
But
echo chamber.
So if your local media outlet is panicking, that's because they ponied up. A lot of them went all in on the Facebook thing, and then Facebook's changing at internet speed, you know, changing to something else, and they're all sitting there going, we just figured out how to have our video story on here. And
we just got emojis.
So, other big progress, you know, we're all for progress here, right? Yeah, especially mobile ransomware. Apparently mobile ransomware is skyrocketing as hackers try to expand the number of potential victims they can target. Compared with a year ago, almost four times as many users are being attacked by mobile ransomware, according to security firm Kaspersky Labs. It's a troubling trend. Ransomware is typically targeted PCs by encrypting all the information that is inside the targeted machines, then holding the data hostage in exchange for money. The threat is that users who fail to pay the ransom will see all their data erased. So anybody who doesn't have a good backup... including hospitals, schools, and police departments have all been major victims, but increasingly hackers have been focusing on smartphones. I guess, you know, fewer people connect their machine, their phone up to their computer and get a decent backup anymore, I guess. Although with the cloud, the other piece is how much data do you really have directly on your phone that you couldn't get without with a basically factory reset and reinstall, you know?
Yeah, but yeah, I think the underlying thing here is that people don't question their phones, whereas people, you know, you look at people, you know, they might hit a questionable site on their laptop or on their workstation, and they might exercise some good internet hygiene. But for most people, there's still this implicit level of trust between users and their phones. They even think of themselves as users. They don't think of it as a computer. It's like it's their phone. So it's kind of weird. I can see that as being like the new way to get stuff in. And there even I've seen or heard of, I haven't seen it out there in the wild, there are, I think it's, what is it, Gmail, a Facebook app, and maybe, I don't know if it was PayPal or something else, but it's apps. It's malware that looks just like these apps. They've taken it, they've more or less done a screenshot, painted the same pictures in whatever language they're doing, and then they just lay on top of those other apps. You go to log in, it lets you log in, but it's scraping credentials, and no one ever thinks to even look there.
Oh.
So I know that's over in the UK. I bet it doesn't take long for it to get over here.
The largest mobile ransomware family detected is called Fusob, F-U-S-O-B. According to Kaspersky, does that mean something? Or F-U-S-O-B?
F-U-S-O-B.
It's two different.
Wow. It's like F-Society, but it's F-U-S-O-Bs. It was responsible for 56% of the attacks during the year and targets Android users. Victims are unwittingly downloading it when visiting porn sites. Fusob, I'll just say it that way, masquerades as a multimedia player called XXX Player that's been designed to watch the porn videos. Yeah, well, because you need a special player designed to watch porn videos. Once downloaded, it can block all user access to a device. Victims are told to pay between $100 and $200 in iTunes gift cards to deactivate the block. Most of the victims have been located in Germany. The ransomware ignores devices that use Russian and several Eastern European languages. Kaspersky noted that much of mobile ransomware detected actually doesn't encrypt any information on the infected device. Smartphone owners usually back up all their data to a cloud service anyway, just like I said, so there's no point to try and encrypt it, the security firm said. Instead, they block user access to apps on the phone. Often victims of mobile ransomware will see a ransom note on their device's screen with instructions on how to pay the ransom and will not be able to use the phone otherwise until they do so. That go to a computer. If this ever happens to you, go to a computer and look up hard reset, and you are very likely to be able to bypass all this stuff and force the thing to reset. To avoid ransomware, Kaspersky advises that users regularly update their software and back up all crucial files. Users should also be wary of downloading anything from untrusted sources and look into buying strong security software. Yeah, and so here's a hint. Getting applications from porn sites is not a way to have a secure phone or device.
I wonder if Apple would approve an app called Polite Ransomware. Where you,
excuse
know,
me.
You download it, you install it, and then it when you run it, it just pops up and is like, excuse me, could you please like pay me $4? I'd really appreciate it.
As long as you give Apple their 30%, they probably would. They would probably let you. It's an in-app purchase.
Yeah, it's just an in-app purchase. And you can choose. Like, if you say, and you can say yes or no. If you say no, like, oh, I'm really sorry. Well, what about $2?
Or as you're using the phone, as you're using the phone, you're on some other app and it pops up and says, sorry to interrupt, but
yeah, because you can tell it, like, you know, in the beginning it asks to turn on notifications and banners, so it'll just send a notification every once in a while. Excuse me, I know you need, I don't mean to be a bother, but you still haven't paid the ransom, so if you could just do that at some point, I'd really appreciate it.
And then after they pay it, you have it thank them randomly with the same screens as the malware. I just wanted to say I really appreciate that you
remember
paid
that,
the full
remember
ransom.
That, remember that time you paid that ransom? That was really awesome.
Good times. We should do that again sometime. So, yeah, mobile mouse.
Do you want to pay another ransom? Just thing, on chance, by,
the,
you know.
The thing, as phones get less expensive and some of that, it seems to me that, you know, on your PC, the fear of, you know, losing work or losing documents that are important to you is fairly high. On the phone thing, it's kind of like, I don't know. I'm surprised that it works enough that they make enough money to have it be worth doing, because it's sort of, you know, again, like I said, you can hard reset the phone. You could always just go get another one. They could take it to the phone store or whatever and probably get it reset and even reloaded. And so it seems like I'm sure people feel more alone when they get their hard drive encrypted or allegedly encrypted on their, you know, as opposed to their phone, where the phone, you can get rid of it. You know, you can get another one. And so anyways, but, you know, obviously they're moving to where I guess more people are doing their browsing on phones. And so they've switched to that.
Yeah. And it looks like, so that the stuff I was talking about is wrong. It's they're overlays for it. It overlays onto WhatsApp, Uber, and Google Play for Android. And it's delivered over an SMS. And the SMS usually says like, hey, we couldn't process your order. Click here to see the order. And you click there, it sideloads if it can, and then boom.
Give them points for cleverness, I guess. But,
yeah.
Boy, you know, that's why, frankly, if you get an email, or, you know, here's just a free tip for everybody. If you get the email where it's like, there's a problem with your bank account, never, ever click the link in the message.
I think people are starting to get that.
Bank or go to the place and type it in yourself. Because, well, or, you know, or the other way that you can get yourself a quick laugh and save yourself the time of trying to actually log into your
bank
account. Well, just often on Apple, if you hover the link, it'll show you what the URL is. And they don't bother, you know, if you look like the who it's from on spam and the stuff on links.
It's a .ru or .cn.
Yeah, .ru is the most common one I see. Or where it's like from customer service and you mouse over it and it's, you know, olga.whatever@something.ru. And so obviously not.
I think people, especially if you're listening to the show through, you know, just being around for, you know, email being around for so long, people, I think, are a little bit leery of emails now. They kind of know not to click on that. But if you get a text and it's like your bank is like Chase and Chase says, hey, Peter, blah, it wouldn't say, hey, yeah. Peter, but it could. Maybe they've got phone records. That's like, oh, they know me. It's coming from my bank. I would trust that. And I'm leery of it. But to me, I think the average user would trust that. More.
And it's that direct sort of interruption. Yeah, a lot of things.
Because you think they've got my number now. It's not that I just blanketed every single phone number in like 713-241. I just hit, you know, all 1,000 or 10,000 of them. You know, you get what I'm after. Hit all of them. But someone, you know, with a small percentage of them will bank with Chase or will bank with, you know, whatever message I'm sending out. So, you know, they'll think it's just for them, I would think.
So, and data security. There's another nice one. This one, although this was a white hat hacker, but, you know, one of the things that governments and companies and all that, they like lists, and they like to keep those lists secret. A database described by some as a terrorism blacklist has fallen into the hands of a white hat hacker who may decide to make it accessible to the public online. The database called World Check belongs to Thomson Reuters and is used by banks, governments, and intelligence agencies to screen people for criminal ties and links to terrorism. Security researcher Chris Vickery claims to have obtained a 2014 copy of the database. He announced the details on Tuesday in a post on Reddit. Oh, this is the best part. No hacking was involved in my acquisition of this data, he wrote. I would call it more of a leak than anything, although not directly from Thomson Reuters. That means it was probably on a server somewhere and somebody stumbled across
it. Bought it on the dark web.
Or
75 cents.
Or it was on some Google thing or something else. In an email, Thomson Reuters said on Wednesday that it was grateful to Vickery for the alert. The third party that leaked the database has taken it down, the company added. So once they heard about it, they knew exactly where to go. Vickery has previously exposed database leaks related to Mexican voters, a Hello Kitty online fan community, and medical records. His copy of the World Check database contains the names of over 2.2 million people and organizations declared heightened risks.
So it looks like these guys go one step above OFAC, which I don't know if that, are you guys familiar with that? It's like the what is it? The U.S. Treasury Office of Foreign Assets Control. So more or less anybody in the U.S. that's taking checks or electronic payments or anything, say like, you know, Pete Hughes comes in and says, hey, I'm going to buy like this and that. They have to, like Amazon would have to process Peter Hughes up against this huge list of all these people that are known terrorists, known drug dealers, known kingpins, known whatever. And we're not allowed to accept money from you or transfer money to you. So they're bragging. I was like, what's, because I haven't really heard of the World Check before. So they're saying they've monitored over 530 sanctioned watch and regulatory law and enforcement lists, hundreds of thousands of information sources, and then they're bragging. They say in 2012 alone, we identified more than 180 entities before they appeared on the U.S. Treasury and on the OFAC list. So, wow. But I wonder if they're not just blanketing everybody. Like, we'll put everybody on there. And yeah, we got 120 of them hit before the government got them.
It sounds like, let's see, that they, to Thomson Reuters, let's see, they it sounds like they get it from different sources and put it together, but users can buy access to the database from Thomson Reuters, so they're sort of renting it out. Of course, leaking the database could create risks and tip off actual bad guys that they've been placed on the list. You would think, you know, if you're a bad enough guy, you've got to have done something where you figured out.
Oh man, I didn't make the list. We got to up the game.
There'll be all those terrorist cells scattered through the Midwest. We're not even on the list, man. You're lame. We're just a gang. We're not a cell. Anyways. So, of course, you know, when you have any kind of list, if you don't pay close attention to where you keep it, then it gets out.
Especially electronic lists.
How much did Windows 10 upgrade stuff irritate you? Was it worth $10,000?
Windows 10,000.
Because it was for this one woman. Microsoft has paid a California woman $10,000 over an unwanted Windows 10 upgrade. According to the Seattle Times, Terry Goldstein's computer, Emmanuel is her brother, right? No, I'm kidding. was used to run her travel agency business, was apparently upgraded to Windows 10 shortly after Microsoft made the free upgrade available to Windows 7 and 8.1 users last year. Goldstein said this update was so problematic that it left her computer crashing and unusable for days at a time. Microsoft's tech support was unable to assist, so she sued Microsoft, asking the court to award her compensation for lost wages and the cost of a new computer. Yeah, if you don't ask, you don't get. She won and was awarded a $10,000 judgment. Microsoft appealed the decision, but then dropped the appeal. According to a Microsoft spokesperson, the company still denies any wrongdoing, but dropped the appeal to avoid the expense of further litigation. This has got to be – I think this is one of those weird cases where, to Microsoft, the pain in the butt factor over $10,000 is actually the pain of going through it is worse than just take it out of petty cash and give her the $10,000. I'm done with this. Just give her the money. Microsoft's aggressive push to get Windows 7 and 8.1 users to upgrade to Windows 10 appears to have been reasonably successful, with usage of the new operating system growing faster than any prior version of Windows. But it comes at a price. The company's used malware-like tactics to trick people into accepting the upgrade, and stories of unwanted automatic installations, though hard to verify, are abundant. The free upgrade is due to end on July 29th, 1 year after Windows 10's initial release. When that goes, so will any accidental or unwanted upgrades. Nonetheless, this payout is hard to interpret as anything other than an invitation for other disgruntled Windows 10 recipients to take legal action.
I'm still upset over Clippy. I wonder if I can't get a payout over mental anguish. No, Clippy,
cash.
I don't want to. I know
pay
what I'm doing.
Petty cash.
Well, now then you got to add something creative. Is I want to thump Bill Gates in the head with the case from my copy of Microsoft Bob 3 times. Got to whack him in the head. That and $5. Anyways. So, and then other legal fun and wrangling. ISPs, this one is from Ars Technica. The headline is interesting. Why ISPs fight against net neutrality probably won't reach the Supreme Court. Oh, because I was really looking forward to seeing the, you know, frankly, obviously they're very well versed on the law, but I really wonder about the large group of people of a certain age who are on the Supreme Court trying to work out how it's a bunch of
They should not be deciding policy that's going to stick around for the next 30 or 40 years as far as tech goes. It's no longer cool for politicians to not know
right.
how technology
the courts,
works.
That, yeah. There's a lot less of that. The thing, so, you know, we talked about it, I guess, last week. The U.S. Appeals Court decision upholding the FCC's net neutrality rules wasn't quite the final word on the matter, as ISPs immediately vowed to appeal the ruling, with AT&T saying it expects the issue to be decided by the Supreme Court. But while the ISPs will give it their best shot, there are some reasons to think the Supreme Court won't take the case. The appeal probably won't make it to a rehearing by the full appeals court, won't even make it to a rehearing by the full appeals court, which is a potential intermediate step before it goes to the Supreme Court, according to legal expert Andrew J. Schwartzman. He wrote this last week in a Benton Foundation article titled Network Neutrality, Now What? Schwartzman is a Georgetown law lecturer who specializes in media and telecommunications policy, so he kind of knows stuff about this. The broadband industry lost a 2-1 decision by a 3-judge panel, which rejected the challenges to the FCC's reclassification of broadband as a Title II common carrier service and the imposition of net neutrality rules. The next step for ISPs and their lobby groups would be a petition for en banc, something like that. That's where the whole court hears it. They could also appeal to the Supreme Court after losing the en banc review or appeal directly without taking that step. The deal is, though, they have to have a reason why it's unconstitutional to, or why it needs to go up. There's a few different problems. One is Judge David Tittell, one of the two who upheld the FCC's rules, is considered to be highly knowledgeable on this issue, and his colleagues will be loath to second guess him. In other words, he's the guy who gets it, and the rest of them are like, but if I can you explain it to us? And he's the one that explains, and since he decided the way he did, then they also have a math problem. They need 6 votes to get a rehearing. There are 11 active judges, of which 2 voted to uphold the decision as part of the 3-judge panel. One of them has removed himself from all decision-making, Merrick Garland, because he's a Supreme Court nominee. So that means ISPs would need 6 votes from the remaining 8 judges to get their hearing. We'll know by the end of July if they're going to push on it. Then their other math problem is to get a Supreme Court review. They have to convince 4 Supreme Court justices to grant a petition for certiorari, I guess, is how it's pronounced. Now you get to learn all this legal mumbo-jumbo. Basically what it is it's that the Supreme Court will hear the case. And they have to get – that's half the justices on the court.
Aren't those like those chocolate bonbons that have like a cream filling?
or is it that Swiss cough medicine? No, that's Ricola.
Ricola.
In their case against the FCC, ISPs argued that the net neutrality rules violate their First Amendment rights, but they, quote, could not convince even Judge Williams, who is typically very receptive to corporate speech arguments, which makes the Supreme Court case on the First Amendment question a long shot. That's really weird to claim that it affects your speech if you can't sit between 2 different people and affect their speech. Because that's what we're really talking about. With net neutrality, it's like, no, I have the right to like step in the middle of somebody else's conversation and shout them down unless they pay me, is really kind of the First Amendment.
What was that called? Ferrario?
Ferrero Rocher.
Oh, the ones where they stack them up in the like pyramids at Christmas. Mm. Only
that's what I was referring to.
Okay.
No, but what was the actual term?
Certiorari. Certiorari.
Hmm.
That might be one to Google and find. How do you pronounce that? or ask Alexa.
No, it's just it's a it could be if it's Latin this the C's are hard, but who knows? It's probably certiorari, certiorari if it's Latin.
We go,
yeah,
Barrett.
I'm not.
I took some Latin way back in the day. I mean, the things you can't really use in real life.
Wow, and here's a.
You saved Latin, didn't
an
you?
An article submitted by...
Way back in the day.
Is Flicted the one who gave the AI Top Gun article, or was that...
No, wasn't me.
Was that you?
Oh, that was me. That was me.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Because the rest of the page is just fascinating. It's from the Daily Mail, so you know it's great sci-tech coverage.
I may have posted the wrong article in there. So I found like several links of it, and I was,
If you
Daily Mail is totally legit, guys.
Good thing you're on a Mac, Pete.
A British, really. Well, just to give you a visual on it, the article
is surrounded.
Is a legitimate subject. It's talking about the artificial intelligence Top Gun.
Oh, wow.
Thing that actually beats the military best pilots in simulations.
I run ad blockers, so I saw none of that stuff around.
Well, the article is surrounded by rails that have it's from the Daily Mail is a rag in...
It's like our Inquirer, I suppose.
The United Kingdom. And... So it's Suns Out, Buns Out, Naked VH1 show promo.
Peter, I think those are ads tailored just to you.
Peter Hughes likes the ads, and he cannot lie.
So, anyways, this is like they did all the Top Gun stuff, but I think the more accurate one, although the movie was garbage, was the one with the... there was an actual movie where their thing was they were the pilots who were flying against the AI controlled planes, which kind of they always do those the plots on those are always like the shark movies.
Independence Day?
No, it wasn't Independence Day. It was one with Jamie Foxx and somebody else, and you know. They just couldn't get away from those AI-controlled jet planes. They just couldn't get away from them.
Wired also hit the story about a handful of hours ago, so I think that this is
maybe
legit.
We'll,
yeah.
Maybe we'll switch to that one and talk about it when we get back after the break. You have been listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett. And he's
Groovehouse.
Thank you.
Your opportunity to be on the KPFT Board of Directors is running out. This Thursday is the deadline to be a candidate for our board. You must be a member and also get signatures of other listener members on a petition for candidacy. Visit elections.pacifica.org to become a candidate and get your petition. Also visit facebook.com/KPFTHouston/events for events designed for you to get your petition signed. And visit kpft.org to make a donation if you're not a member yet. Don't forget, you only have until this Thursday. We need Houston's best and brightest, so join our board today. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
Usted probablemente ha estado en su carro buscando por coberturas de noticias o buscando alguna música nueva. O a lo mejor usted estuvo en su casa cambiando el cuadrante buscando algo diferente. Su radio probablemente se haya quedado en KPFT y permanecido allí. Si usted es un nuevo radioescucha de esta estación, esta es la manera en que la radio de la comunidad trabaja. Nosotros dependemos de radioescuchas, no de comerciantes, para obtener dinero que usamos para la operación de nuestra estación. Nosotros tenemos campañas de donaciones pocas veces al año, donde nosotros le pedimos a usted que apoye nuestro trabajo con una donación monetaria. Usted ha venido dependiendo de nosotros, pero nosotros dependemos de usted. Vaya a la página de internet www.kpft.org para hacer su donación monetaria. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and we now return to Technology Bites.
You have been owned. We at F Society will smile as we watch you and your dark soul die.
Okay.
All right, well, so found a different article. Well, or Barrett had a
the original intention of posting, yeah,
from Wired, which the ads are a lot more mainstream. An AI fighter pilot beats a human, but no need to panic, it says. Really. The deal is, you know, while Google was building an artificial intelligence that could beat a grandmaster at the ancient game of Go, University of Cincinnati alums took a different tack. They designed an AI that could take on a fighter pilot. That does have a coolness factor. If you're going to come up with the project, that one's pretty cool. Dubbed Alpha, the system recently beat retired United States Air Force Colonel Gene Lee in multiple flight simulator trials.
Not really,
Jay Lee. Explained in a paper. Oh, that's why Jay's not around. He's been
code word
fighting. No, the idea isn't to replace human fighter pilots, according to Nicholas Ernest, a University of Cincinnati alum and the founder of Cybernetics, Cybernetix.
Although maybe a radio host.
The company. Oh, an AI that could beat a radio host. That our jobs could be gone. Yeah, of course our jobs could be. A lot of radio broadcasters' jobs could be
beep.
Taken
Thanks
over
for that, Pete.
Artificially
beep.
Artificially taken over by a playlist. If you've listened to any of the whatever Jack stations or Bob's or any,
you need 40 songs and
anyways,
a repeat button. That's all you need.
Their idea with this wasn't to replace people, at least not initially, but more to be kind of an assistant to pilots. Because if you think about it, the amount of information that they're handling at a time is so extreme, and so having I think maybe the closest equivalent in like movies, if you're wanting to understand what this is supposed to do, is it's like Jarvis, you know, like in the Iron Man movies, which is where it's there to help take on the load of what all of everything is going on.
Or for those without access to Iron Man suits, like if you've ever played like racing games on like Xbox or PlayStation, where they've got, you know, like some of them, you've got to shift, you've got to do the brakes, you've got like all these real world physics that you've got to manage and manipulate. Or you put it on easy mode and you just steer on the track and it manages braking, manages all these hard physics problems for you. This is kind of what it does. It makes it all easy, and it takes like the very difficult job of flying a jet. It makes it kind of like point and go with the stick, which is kind of
well,
cool.
And for good advice, you know, like what to do tactically. Because mm-hmm. we're not talking – when they talk about it beating an AI fighter pilot beating a human, you're not talking about like close quarters dogfighting stuff. You're talking more the kind of tactical stuff where you're launching missiles at somebody from distance and that kind of stuff. One thing they're talking about is that it might fly unmanned aircraft that act as wingmen for planes piloted by humans.
No
so
more
the next
Iceman.
Step will be, so the next step will be one of these that can be your wingman. You know?
Val Kilmer has been officially replaced.
Now it's Iceman, but it stands for Integrated Circuit.
But then they'll have, will they have the full, will they have the full AI wingman? Hey, beautiful, would you like to?
I was just thinking that it was going to be the autopilot auto from Airplane.
Just emails you and says, Lonely Housewives want to meet you. Shut up, autopilot.
One thing that's interesting is that this is different than the AI systems that Google and Facebook and Microsoft are doing. Those are doing neural networking, which is inspired by how the human brain works. Alpha is based on fuzzy logic, which is like your rice cooker uses.
Kind of like logic, like Boolean stuff is 0 or 1. Fuzzy logic works on degrees of truth, so the value can be anywhere between 0 and 1. So it's kind of like, you know, and then you add all these up, and then you start to get, it's kind of neat. And I think they're doing it in trees. So they're actually doing like Lisp kind of commands with fuzzy logic to be able to make very complex decisions very quickly.
Wow. Yeah, they didn't really get into that in the article.
There's a third article that, so whereas the Daily Mail article is kind of far on the right, and then this is the center one, I did find the original article I found actually got into the deeper workings of it. So this is like the Median article, somewhere between the buns and
this
the...
This does have, one of the things is that this type of approach and the fuzzy logic thing may end up being tying to the self-driving car. The other thing is, they do sort of mention it, but this is the like, very fuzzed down and not clear. They say that Alpha can handle hundreds of inputs thanks to an approach called genetic fuzzy trees. In essence, this approach breaks larger fuzzy logic problems down into much smaller problems while still maintaining relationships between the various inputs. It's allowed it to run on cheap desktop computers for the training phase, and once it's trained, Alpha can run on tiny, low-powered computers like the Raspberry Pi or smartphones.
Whoa, we've got Raspberry Pis. We just need a fighter jet. If anyone has a fighter jet, please bring it to the Geek Gathering.
Or you can just convince your drone that it's a fighter jet with the Raspberry Pi on it. So far, it's only been trained in the virtual world. Ernest explains that the system started out fighting itself in flight simulators. From there, it graduated to fighting Air Force Research Lab's baseline AI opponents. Then it moved on to fighting an actual human being, Colonel Lee.
But they left the game tic-tac-toe in there, right? Just in case.
Shall we
play? Do you want to play thermonuclear warfare? And then this one is, I added this one in because I saw it on Wired, and I didn't realize that it was as recent as a story as it is. This one is right out of Mr. Robot, quite frankly. In the past 2 years, a group of researchers in Israel has become highly adept at stealing data from air-gapped computers. That is really the like Fort Knox of stealing data. You know, anybody can steal data from a machine that's networked to the world on the internet. Air-gapped computers are not connected to the internet or connected to other machines that are connected to the internet.
No wireless, supposedly, no radio, no anything like that is the rule.
They do it using the fans.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there are three attacks they've designed. Mordecai Gurry, manager of research and development at the Cybersecurity Research Center at Ben-Gurion University, and colleagues at the lab have previously designed three attacks that use various methods for getting data from air-gapped machines, methods involving radio waves, electromagnetic waves in the GSM network, and even the heat emitted by computers. But the new one is it controls the fan, the cooling fans in the computers, to make the sound emitted by them, I guess, be in a code that they can then record and turn back into data. It can only be used to steal a limited amount of data, but it's sufficient to siphon encryption keys and lists of usernames and passwords, as well as small amounts of keylogging histories and documents from more than about 24 feet away. So far, they've been able to siphon encryption keys and passwords at a rate of 15 to 20 bits per minute, more than 1,200 bits per hour, but they're working on methods to accelerate the data extraction. We found that if we use two fans concurrently in the same machine, the CPU and chassis fans, we can double the transmission rates. So your next Wi-Fi could also cool your house. No, it's just fascinating, you know, basically any kind of, there is no totally secure system. And this isn't even the like simple baseball bat decryption of like find somebody who works there and, you know, put them in a thumb rack or whatever and get all the info out of them. So
now you do have to get some software on the machine
to That's make true. It go. You have to have physical access to it at some point so you can infect it.
Or remote access. I mean, just have to get the malware on there, you know.
Yeah, they say you have to have physical access to the system using either removable media like a USB flash drive or a FireWire cable connecting the air-gapped system to another computer.
Oh, really? That's kind of lame.
Well, I guess if it's if it's connected to like a SAN or something like that, even though then if it's independent and it's not connected to the internet, then they might think it was safe. So that it's just fascinating. I mean, that you kind of go that is some serious hacker thinking to figure out, hey, let's use the cooling fans, because nobody listens to the cooling fan other than that it's going or not.
They're saying you don't need that. You don't need those things in this attack. Unless I just misunderstood you.
You don't need the...
Yeah, it says, you don't need any of those things for an air gap attack.
But don't you need that to install the software on it?
No. That was my point. You don't have to have a USB cable or a FireWire cable to install the software. You can install the software through a click or through the web or remotely. You don't have to have physical access to install the software.
But if it's air gap, you can't install it off the web.
No. Yeah, I guess so. Well, I guess once the machine is air gapped, though.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's saying.
Okay.
If it's air gapped, you have to have access to the machine so you can connect something to it to install the software, then disconnect it. Now it's air gapped, still air gapped.
Yeah, well, I think it says like to steal data from them, an attacker generally needs physical access to the system, either using removable media like a USB flash drive or FireWire cable connecting the air gapped system to another computer. But attackers can also use near physical access. So that's the near physical access.
Well, this one,
yeah,
it says they still have to get physical.
But you still have to install the software somehow.
Yeah.
Once it's installed, you don't need access to the machine, but you needed it at least once just to get it on there.
Yeah,
but Stuxnet's a good example of somebody probably brought it in on a USB drive and installed it, and then it got into the air gapped network.
So that's fascinating in their lab to come up with it. You know, the fact that they're promoting it, that they know how to do it. I don't know does that mean they've already done it and that it's not, that whoever they did it to probably knows and that's why they'll say it, or what? Because it's kind of, if you knew this kind of thing where you can, you know, where you can, you're set up to steal data from an air-gapped computer, which, you know, banks and governments and all those rely on, that this is the, like, this is where you put the crown jewels, is in this stuff. The fact that they're announcing it and writing a white paper makes me wonder what the is it that they have something better than that already, or you know, I guess, well, and I guess the other thing would be, if you know, the, apparently all you'd have to do is have a bunch of other fans going that are doing the same sort of thing.
But this isn't, it looks like the thinking behind this is, you know, since you couldn't get like another computer in there to go like, because it's a cleaner environment. I was thinking like maybe the computers were air gapped at some points and not, but that's probably doesn't make any sense. Probably once air gapped, always air gapped, and they probably put them in there clean. So you would have to have physical access to it. But what they're saying is they will try to infect the attackers, or the, not the attacker, the user's phone, and then the phone can listen to what's coming out over the fans and then transmit it out over GSM. So you still don't have to have physical access to it.
Yeah. So, and then finally on the news, we've been doing this slow, and that's on purpose. This one, it's a tougher article to use as source. It's from Fast Company. And apparently, earlier this month in San Francisco, there was a meeting of technologists and activists who are determined to re-decentralize or redistribute the web, and by extension the broader internet, by returning control and permission to the edges. Hosted by Internet Archive founder Brewster, is it Colley, who has called for a moonshot to, quote, lock the web open, unquote. The decentralized web summit brought together some of the graybeards who invented it all with the millennials who see beyond the boundaries of Facebook. If you go to the Internet Archive on their video player, they have, like, this whole thing if you want to watch it. Colley framed the gathering with three key questions. How can we build a reliable, decentralized web? How can we make it more private, and how do we keep it fun and evolving?
I thought you were going to say, what is your name?
What is your quest?
The airspeed of a...
And what is swallow. Your favorite color? Okay, off you go.
Blue, red, no red. Tim Berners-Lee was there, and since he kind of knows from the web, as Berners-Lee noted, he built atop things that already worked, such as the domain name system and TCP/IP. He took what we now call the cloud as a given and added, among other things, HTML for display and URLs. He said, these are names, not places, he stressed. And then everybody built on top of it. But, you know, now you've got Google, Facebook, Twitter, Salesforce, and it's being siloed, data and service silos, and mobile particularly, you know, kind of re-centralizes. And so these people are looking at how do we turn it back into the open, non-siloed.
How do we turn it back into Usenet?
Oh, yeah.
Binaries.
Actually, the sad thing is the web has turned into Usenet if you read the comments anywhere. This one, I don't know. I guess it's hard to find the angle to where we can talk about it. But the interesting part is Mitchell Baker was one of the speakers who chairs the Mozilla Foundation and Corporation, among others, is a female. In her talk or that first morning, Baker offered a few basic design principles for a re-decentralized web. One, the web is immediate. That means safe, instant access to content through a universal address without needing to install anything else in the browser. The web is open. Anyone can publish content without permission or barrier to its audience and provide access as they see fit without the interference of a third party. Three, the web is universal. Content runs on any device or platform. We achieve this through standards. And four, the web has agency. A, quote, user agent, unquote, in developer lingo, can choose how to interpret content provided by a service to you. In other words, you control your browser. For example, you can use ad blockers. You know, I don't know. The tough part is that at some point you have to have a server. You have to have the devices that are putting this stuff out there, and that leads to a certain amount of centralization of one sort or another. I think, you know, given the list of people who are participating in this, if somebody can figure out how to make the internet decentralized again, these people might, but you may want to, you know, some of the things they get into is like, how do you verify that content is legitimate and hasn't been tampered with in between? A lot of this stuff, you know, frankly, the other reason I put this in here is a lot of this sounds like things that are being discussed and are issues with the Internet of Things, the kind of decentralized.
Yeah. The old internet being decentralized was pretty much used and run by a bunch of people who had a decent technical knowledge, and that's no longer the case for the internet at all. And the only reason it is where it is today is because all these companies came along and said, you know what, you don't have to figure out how to install a web server. You don't have to figure out how to code in HTML. You don't have to figure out how to, like, you know, set up a server to create something that gets you on some social network that other people have set up servers. No, we're just going to set up a system, and you just log in, and now you're using it.
Just give us all your info.
So, I mean, but the thing is, that is how we've gotten to where we are today. And, I mean, I understand the idea of, like, having, you know, the option for more voices on the internet and not being locked into, like, you know, everybody's on one thing or whatever. But at the same time, part of the reason that the internet is as huge as it is and so many people are using it that do is because it has been simplified and dumbed down to the point that you no longer have to have any kind of technical expertise to be a part of the internet.
Yeah, I think that's completely, like, you look at Facebook, that's kind of taking the, you know, the point of blogs where someone might have installed, like, PHP Nuke, you know, even like something where you had to install something. I think there's like 1.65 billion of Facebook users. So what we've done is we've taken, whereas, and we would never have gotten that growth like Flick had said, but we could have had 1.65 billion distinct blogs or distinct sites or distinct, you know, servers, and instead we've got one site that houses all those. So when the government wants to go find information, anyone
except,
does, they go to that.
Except
we
never
shop.
Would have gotten to that point, except maybe like 140 years from now.
Yeah.
Right, and they combined the other piece, which is, and I think, and that's one of the things that they didn't, you know, maybe they mentioned it in another part of the article, but if Facebook is the equivalent of a bunch of blogs, except it also has the subscription side of it where you can connect up to people so that you don't have to go search out.
It's RSS.
Imagine if you had to go, you know, if you've got 100 Facebook
friends,
and
a huge database.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of like Diaspora though. So I like the idea that there is a single format or a single way of sharing information. Like I can show you pictures. I can show you what I'm up to. I can share calendars, contact information. But the idea is that I own that information. I can decide who I share it with. Not that I give that information over to a third party and say, hey, please share it with these people. Don't share it with those people. And where really they're saying, okay, we'll respect your wishes with your friends, but advertisers and the government, they're getting pretty much.
But that still requires somebody to set up a Diaspora pod.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, that's not
right.
Gonna happen.
And now there's a guy from India, Pirate Parikh or something. I've forgotten his name. Anyway, he wrote a Diaspora installer for, I forgot what VM system or whatever. Anyway, he's made it a lot simpler to get a pod up and running. But at the same time, it's mostly technical people that are on it, because mostly technical people are the ones that can set up pods. However, you can create an open pod. Like I have an open pod that I've been running since 2011. And, you know, I mean, there's people on it and I don't have no clue who they are. But that's good and bad. I mean, because I could get somebody on there that's insane and evil and, you know, I wouldn't have any control except to shut their account down once I found out about it. But they could go set up their own pod and be a part of the system, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, in Diaspora, Diaspora, it's not the only one. There's also Friendica, Red Matrix, I think. There's several, and now they're trying to do a federation of open social media.
Is it ELG, the open source social? No, that's different. Yeah, this is cool, though. This is where things need to go.
So they're trying to get it, and unfortunately, Diaspora or Diaspora, I never know how to pronounce it properly. Whatever that word is, they were one of the first ones. And so they kind of set up their own standards, and maybe they didn't go about doing it in quite the best way. And so now the guys that are maintaining it, more like Jonathan Haas and some of those guys, are trying to like step back and like rework stuff to interact with systems that were started later that had that as an initial goal, like Friendica and some of those other ones. But there is some amount of cross-pollination now where you can see posts from one open social media network cross over into the other one and back, you know, back and forth.
It seems, you know, I don't want to sidetrack the conversation. It seems to me like one of the things that's missing on the internet with that sort of the centralization attitude, you know, so a big company goes, oh yeah, you know, we need to do something with this data, or you want to put out your data, well, you give it to us and we'll control it for you. It seems like on a lot of things like medical records and some of the, and frankly, like a lot of your social media posts, it should be more that you own it and have it, and that you can control how it goes out or who can access it. Or where, you know, if somebody's going to act as the gatekeeper, it should be you with your information, as opposed to the centralizer, I guess, for lack of a better term. And there are things where that's important, like, again, like your medical records. The idea being, if you could have them where you have control of them, or, you know, where they're stored somewhere, but you're the only one who can open access to them, then you can go to any doctor and get all your medical records, as opposed to right now where they're in.
And they've been trying to work on that for a long time, and there's several competing systems, and I don't think they communicate with each other because there are different standards. But there's there's a whole lot of bureaucracy and protection of data in that field, the medical records field, which causes that to move slowly.
Although it also, it seems like a lot of those things turn very quickly into security through secured obscurity. If it's in my, you know, my special format,
they're also,
nobody else can read it but me.
Well, but they're also very, very scared of HIPAA violations and stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of times, even though it's legal to do something, they won't do it because they're scared that it might break some HIPAA thing, and then they'll get fined by the government for, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars.
The thing that for lack of a better word, the thing that sort of tickles the edge of my mind is the data context is important. You know, if the thing says, oh, well, your cholesterol level, the cholesterol, your cholesterol level is, I don't know, 140, whatever that means. That data, unless you have the context of that it belongs to, that it's associated with this person, it's kind of useless. And so it seems like on some of this where you get like, you know, it's off the top of my head, but the kind of BitTorrent where the data isn't all assembled until unless you've got all the pieces, that some of this data could just be out there and you don't really have to secure it because you don't know who it belongs to until you assemble it. I used to think about it was like for images, you know, when people were being sort of copyright maximalist. Imagine if you take an image, if you look at the file in like a text editor, it's a bunch of text. Well, you could break that up into pieces, and if you found a way where you essentially it just knows to go get a piece from here, a piece from here, and a piece from there, and then put them together, you only get the picture if you get all the pieces and if you've done it in the right place. So it seems like, you know, I don't know, just it's one of those where I don't have the math skills to figure out how you could make something like that work. But so you secure the part that's important, which is that, oh, well, this piece of information is about this person. Otherwise, it's useless. You know,
yeah,
it's kind of like if they know that your address is 123, well, if they only just have the number, if they don't have any of the other context, then it doesn't. And it's useless, basically.
Yeah. Not knowing how they cut it, I would assume that most of the data would be tagged with the patient ID or with this. They're probably doing with socials. We see a lot of just bad data in the line of work that I'm in that comes across where we see like, hey, we need to know everyone that, you know, is employed with your company for, you know, last month. And they send us, like, if they're smokers, their children's social security numbers, how much they make, their address, just way, way too much info. So that's just kind of crazy. I like what Flichter was saying, where I think people should be in charge of protecting their own data. But I think this is like a very short-lived period of time we've got to do that. So it's kind of like sending someone back to the Wild West and telling them how to, like, you know, shoot a long rifle and circle wagons. I don't think most people can handle that, but it's you need to. And that's why people are handing off their data, handing off their protection to other people that they don't really – they can't trust. They think they trust them, but, you know, Facebook says, yeah, we'll circle the wagons and fight
off. Well, yeah,
you know,
it's like somebody came into town that's good with a gun, and it's like, okay, we'll pay you to protect us.
Yeah, a little music man.
But the thing is it like a good person that's going to, like, take the money and protect you, or is it somebody that's going to take the money and also take advantage of you while they're protecting you?
Are you basically paying the person that was coming to steal your stuff anyway?
Yeah.
And now you're paying them, and then they steal your stuff.
The downside of this is that, you know, most of your average people on the street, you know, unless you're kind of, you know, a little bit geeky, they're not going to have the time to go read everything to learn how to do that. You know, attack surfaces change, you know, social engineering changes a little bit. It's all kind of the same. But, you know, it just takes a lot of effort. So to ask someone to do all that and then go own a blog, they're not going to do it.
So the world has too many jobses and not enough wazzes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, this is unrelated. I don't know how this popped in my head, but I just want to say that I'm really glad. I don't want to get into politics either, but I'm really glad that the Brexit vote happened and that Brexit won. Not because I'm a fan of that at all. I think it's probably not a good choice for them to leave the EU, but whatever. I don't really care. I'm just glad because it happened, and so the media just like totally focused on England and them doing this stupid thing, and they had all these like video interviews or quotes from people who voted for it. The like next day were like, oh, I wish I could go back and change it because I wouldn't vote for it. I didn't realize my vote was gonna count.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I'm just like, yes, yes.
We're not
I'm
the
just,
only bad
I'm
ones.
So glad that the U.S. and the whole presidential thing isn't being focused on for a little while. Like, let's keep focusing on Britain and just, you know, just putting their village idiots on the media news for a while.
It does seem like a surprising and astonishing number of the people they talk to are basically like the dog that caught the car.
Yeah.
I just never thought that.
I mean, I voted for it, but I didn't think it was really going to happen. And now I'm worried about getting a job.
I'm going to go Google car. what is a car?
That was another.
I didn't know that.
That was another thing is that they were saying that, like, after the vote, the number of Google searches in the UK for
what is the EU?
What is Brexit? What is the EU, like, spiked?
How much money will I lose?
That's a little late for that.
Lots.
Oh, well, and yeah, I guess it kind of one of the things that, you know, democracy has its thing, and I guess some of this is maybe more for the next show after this one on if you're listening to us on live on the air, but it does. I think the just my quick side thing on the Brexit thing is one vote. I'm not saying that you know that. Basically, you don't want to be the person where it's like, oh, best 2 out of 3, you know, 3 out of 5, you know, whatever. But the deal of, you know, one vote at one moment, you kind of, and it's close, you get into that whole sort of, well, you know, if it had rained in a couple places, it might have gone it would have been a totally different way. So was it a decision? Did the people really
see? Was it really a mandate from the masses?
Or was this, or is it just...
This is related, but not really continuing any political conversation in particular. I saw a cartoon that was really funny because it had like a EU talking to England and saying like, you know, you really shouldn't leave because it's really good for, you know, we have strength in numbers.
Stronger as a whole.
Stronger, you know, strength in unity, you know, and then England's like, screw you, we don't want to be a part of this, we're out of here, we can make it our own. And then the next thing is the England Globe talking to the Irish Globe and the Scotland Globe and the Wales Globe saying, hey, we need to stick together because we're stronger together.
Yeah, I just wonder, has England just become Europe's crazy ex-girlfriend? and while you think of that or have that visual image, I guess we'll do this. Fight of the Empire. Yeah, I'll do these quick because we're way into the show. Usually we're doing this earlier, but... there is a new Lightning headphone dev kit, which hints more at a phone without a headphone jack. Sirius Logic Kit offers native Lightning connectivity for headphones and headsets. Hmm. So, you know, that's according to Apple Insider that they've announced a development kit for hardware developers to make Lightning versions of audio hardware.
Does it say you have to have a DAC in your side?
Let's see. Kit includes a reference design circuit board suitable for embedding into an inline remote or similar that combines a 114 decibel digital audio converter with a 35 milliwatt headphone driver and supports microphone input. The kit also provides a development board that has headers for logic probes, a 3.5 millimeter audio jack for use with existing analog hardware, and remote buttons to aid debugging and development. As well as the hardware, it also includes a sample iOS application.
So Apple or somebody probably be selling a dongle that converts from Lightning to audio port and have a built-in DAC, and you can put in hit any headphones.
One of the rumors that I've heard is that that they're not going to have like direct Lightning headphones available when they do the release of the phone. And so you'll get a dongle and regular Apple headphones for the
but it'll be like a garbagey DAC, so people have to go out and buy like nicer dongles that have higher, you know, DACs.
Oh, so that way then people in the 22nd century that then it'll be kind of like our wax cylinder thing. Yeah, man, I only listen to stuff on the DAC from the iPhone 7 from 2016. You've got to listen to it, man. It's just got
it has a real like digital hiss warmth to it.
It's the only way to hear the real music, man. The soul of the music.
You only listen to P. Diddy through that because, you know, it's just that's the only way it sounds authentic.
1920s beatboxing. So, that, you know, obviously it's kind of a better sign if they're going to ditch the 3.5 millimeter headphone plug. When there's actually like hardware and development environments to build the
that'll
the
exist
successor.
When they do it.
So kudos on that front. And then this one we kind of hinted at some of the info on it weeks and weeks ago, but Apple has officially retired the Thunderbolt display, but they didn't announce a replacement. So essentially, they're telling you go talk to Dell or somebody else if you're wanting to plug a external monitor. Apple is not in the external monitor business right now.
Huh.
So they've yet to announce an updated version of the 2011 Thunderbolt display, but they won't be selling the old one either. They're going to sell any existing stock through the online and brick and mortar Apple stores, but once it's done, they're not going to continue manufacturing it. According to a statement given to TechCrunch, Apple's pointing its users towards third-party monitors.
That's
instead
interesting.
Instead of a like 5K Retina version of the Thunderbolt display.
I guess maybe they decided the margins weren't there for monitors anymore.
Although, so the last paragraph in this article is from Ars Technica. For now, if you buy a Mac Mini or Mac Pro and want a monitor, or if you just want a second screen for your iMac or MacBook, you'll need to buy a Thunderbolt display before Apple's stock runs out, or buy something from somewhere else and live with the extra cables. You know, the pricing on the Thunderbolt display, even with them discounting it heavily and all that, is not very good.
Although
I like
they're
Apple
really
stuff, and it's
they're really
quality.
Nice display. I mean, the picture quality is really nice on
yeah.
it.
Yeah, though I got there's a Dell that I got that's a higher res than their Thunderbolt display. Because see, the problem is it's the 2011 Thunderbolt display. It's got 2011 resolution on it. It's not. I don't know if it's HD. I guess they don't really say. I mean, I guess I'd have look it up on Apple, but what the resolution is on it. But I'm betting it's like HD. It's probably, you know, 1080p essentially, which is kind of nothing anymore. Maybe it's a little better than that, but
it's not VGA.
I bought a Dell that's like 3400 pixels across by 1980 high or something. It's not a 4K, but it's a really good display, and it was about half the price of a Thunderbolt one. And oh yeah, all the extra cables. I have a. I guess the deal with the Thunderbolt display is, do you not have to? Does it get its power through the Thunderbolt?
It can do everything through the Thunderbolt port.
So you get the one. Well, I'll deal with the plug. I can deal with the extra cord and plugging it into the plug strip to get by. Last thing is and this one's been out there too. The rumors kind of keep popping in and out as far as for the iPhone 7. It sounds like the next gen iPhone home button might have force touch features, you know, with a kind of a Star Wars tie in there. And this is not the phone number you were looking for. I guess maybe that's a way to have the home button stay relevant before they get rid of it entirely and just go to force touch on the screen. There's a report from analysts at Cowen Company. A number of supply chain field checks have indicated that Apple may do away with a physical home button instead of adopting a home button that sits flush with the phone. Apple's Force Touch technology will reportedly be built into the home button to provide haptic feedback when pressed, much like the Force Touch trackpad on Apple's most recent MacBooks. With haptic feedback, iPhone users would still feel the sensation of pressing on the home button, even without a button to actually depress. It does the vibration. I mean, I don't know. I've used some of that stuff, and I guess, you know, I guess it giving you that where you know something happened is good, as opposed to the kind of crappy, like the old Atari, you know, those little the old membrane keyboards that you couldn't tell if you really pressed
it. Push it really hard on every key.
And then eventually you get frustrated and push on it with like a pencil, and then you break the membrane and it's all hosed.
A whole lot of gas pumps used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like having just at least one button on there that's not a tactical button that gives you feedback to where, but you can tell where the button is just by holding the phone.
Well, that's true.
You know, that's a big thing. Just, you know, kind of a North Star as far as phone orientation goes.
Although I guess the deal is if it's software, though, then it could be, you know, as long as you're holding the phone somewhere approaching... I wonder how they're going to handle that.
Is there going to be a difference between like a tap and like a long push? Because that's the thing. Like, I can put my thumb on, you know, like my home button, quote unquote home button, on like, what is this, a Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge Plus? And it's, you know, but until you throw a little bit of weight on it, it doesn't actually actuate. So that's what I like about it.
Yeah, so that'll be one of those tricks that only old. It'll be a dad trick, is where you try to, where the phone doesn't have a physical button and you keep trying to spin
which
it around
up?
And put your thumb on it. I don't know, with the giant phones, it's like with the button at the bottom, you can hardly hold the phone in one hand and press the button with your thumb.
Yeah, there's a whole new kind of
at the same time.
Where, I guess, yeah, acrobatics with holding large phones.
So maybe it's going to be that you just force touch anywhere on the screen and it treats it as the home button. Although, I guess I wonder, how does it work then if it's asleep? How does it know to check for the...
Psst, hey, phone.
Touching the you have to say, hey, Siri.
The Force awakens.
The Force touch awakens. All right, so that's all the Apple-y rumors. There's, and just, I guess, a side thing. It's not really a rumor, but apparently it's now been a decade since Apple switched to Intel for their computers.
Wow.
I thought it was longer than that, but in the summer of 2006, Apple transitioned from using PowerPC chips to Intel chips. Yes, kids, you know, you younger ones at home, the Apple had their own processors from IBM for many years. First, they had Motorola processors, the 68000 series and stuff, and then they had the PowerPC. RISC chips. Remember, that was going to be the big
reduced
future.
Reduced instruction set.
And then finally Intel, you know, won and dominated. The thing is, and that's why Intel is just the totally most giant successful chip company in the world.
Doing it
now.
For everybody.
Well, but they missed on phones.
Yeah.
And tablets, and, you know, they're only doing desktops and laptops, really, and...
TI's still around.
TI's coming around.
TI's still making chips.
They're coming back, and everyone's trying to get back into the Internet of Things, but they're betting on that, as is Atari.
But yeah, I didn't realize that basically Intel-based Macs are only a year older than the iPhone. 9 years ago today, Apple launched the very first iPhone, but 10 years ago, they switched to Intel processors. So... I thought it was a lot earlier than that, but I guess I think it's because they went to the aluminum look before they went to the Intel processors, and it was so kind of transparent when they switched that it wasn't as big. There's not like a visual that you can, you know, think of. Oh, and my Mac looked like
this. I bought a Power Mac Dual G5 in 2003, I think. So they didn't have Intel then.
No Intel inside. So, let's see. And so I guess we don't have that much time left, but fortunately we don't have all that much other stuff. We'll go to try by a fry, and then he'll mispress the button.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snark tank?
All right. Well, this one we might have to rename the segment to Try, Buy, or Gee, I Wish I'd Won the Lottery. this one, I would love to try it. I don't think I could ever afford to buy it. You know, you love going to the movies and you have the IMAX, you know, where there's the giant screen and this amazing sound and all that. Apparently, there's now a product, the IMAX Private Theater. Far bigger, louder, and better than a traditional home theater setup, modeled after IMAX's private screening room, which has played host to many filmmakers coming to see their films in IMAX for the first time. This integrated solution includes custom IMAX hardware, including state-of-the-art dual 4K projection systems, a proprietary laser-aligned sound system, and a floor-to-ceiling, wall-to-wall screen, and consulting from IMAX specialists who work with your architects, interior designers, and installers. So that's there's a little sign about what kind of cost we're talking about.
So you can
get
that in your apartment?
In your tiny home. I want to put it in my tiny home. They will work with your architects, plural.
Probably will not work with your budget, I'm assuming.
And installers to ensure that everything is built to the company's exacting performance standards. Available in 20 to 40 seat platinum or more intimate palais configurations. Ooh. Apparently, the rough estimate is like $400,000 for this thing.
What?
Yeah, but think about it. No gum under the seats, no sticky, mysterious
floors.
Well,
unless you have kids.
Unless you pay people to do that for you, to give you the full theater experience. Hmm. No other people talking during your thing, except you, because you own the theater, and so you can be that rude person who ruins the movie.
You can bring your own handheld video camera in there and like record it.
I just want to go shoot at the screen.
And then show it on your shaky cam and on your big IMAX, IMAX screen.
What?
And then this one, this is what was there to talk about this week. You know, I hate when it's like, and here's one to understand. None of us are obviously getting an IMAX home theater, and I would doubt that any of us are going to get the Hear One smart earphones that are $300 pre-order from a company called Doppler. The deal is, though, these are sort of amazing earbuds that they can act like an equalizer for your surroundings. But instead of just blocking entire frequencies, it can identify and target specific sounds, suppressing or amplifying them based on your preferences. In addition, it supports wireless streaming of music and phone calls, playing audio while letting you stay aware of what's going on around you, and can use its multi-microphone rig to let you communicate with assistants like Siri or Google Now in the most natural way possible.
Is this the same people that made the Whisper 2000? Because you can hear what people are saying about you from far away.
While you wear your blue blockers.
Well, it's based on the technology and feedback from the Hear Active Listening System. So the deal is you can, with an app, you can choose to screen out voices or particular sounds, but leave the rest coming through.
What about dogs barking and doors closing?
Doors closing and
they look wireless, don't they?
And they're wireless. So it's the two individual earbuds that go in.
But do they stay in?
Apparently, what they do, yeah, really. Yeah,
no, that's the problem. I mean, those things are, they just don't stay in.
It's like you drop one. It's not like losing an earring. You drop one and you're out the $150.
Ouch.
But the thing about it is, though, you can like listen to music and walk down the street, and if somebody calls your name or if there's traffic, you can still hear.
It looks a little bit like half the Uhura communicator piece. Yeah, from Star Trek.
So when everybody's yelling at you while you walk down the street listening to your music and they're honking and that, you'll actually hear it. What is that guy listening to? Get some dance lessons.
Although, I mean, honestly, I know people use Bluetooth headsets all the time, but I'm not entirely sure that I want an inner ear, something that goes inside my ear and doesn't stick out that much further, transmitting 2.4 gigahertz,
nice,
you know, radiation back to my cell phone. I mean, that's what's happening there. That's the only way, because it streams music, right?
Right.
They got to get hot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Melt your earwax.
Depends on what you're listening to.
I don't know. They do they have enough power in them to get hot? you know, because the batteries on them have to be pretty. You know, I have a feeling the future is that kind of, you know, individual in your ear kind of deals for a lot of people.
In your
just
ear.
Put on some Buster Poindexter, let it play.
You know, well, actually, my theory is it's going to go in two directions at the same time. One is like 15-pound like coffee cans with a big helmet. Mm-hmm. That go over your ears so you can walk down the street, sort of the equivalent of the really baggy pants. And then the other one will be like Q-tip sized earbuds that you can actually lose inside your ear and not be able to find them. What? And then you like cough and pops out of your nose or whatever later because they're so tiny.
Right, but... next to my Zoolander phone. Awesome. I wonder where that went.
What is this? Earbuds for ants?
And here's an interesting one, another one for Barrett. The Wi-Fi Alliance Industry Group is now certifying products that can deliver multi-gigabit speeds and improve coverage in dense networks by delivering data to multiple devices simultaneously. Said it right now, you know, they kind of just use – there's the pool of all the wireless in the around you, and there's no focus to it or any of that, and so they're just sharing the same pool, where this is more, I guess, specific to each individual device. The new certification focuses on the so-called Wave 2 features of the 802.11 AC spec. It includes 802.11 AC is a few years old, but includes several important features that were not available at launch. One is MU-MIMO.
Yes. MU-MIMO.
Multi-user, multi-input, and multi-output. MU-MIMO is powered by multi-user beamforming technology that lets wireless access points send data streams to at least three users simultaneously. Without MU-MIMO, routers stream to just one device at a time, but switch between them very fast so users don't notice a slowdown, except, of course, when lots of devices are on the network, where this would let them have multiples going full-on at the same time and aren't playing games to sort of switch out the... to cover it. With the 80 megahertz channel supported in 802.11 AC Wave 1, each data stream could provide up to 436 megabits per second, and when coupled with MU-MIMO routers, can send up to 433 megabits per second to at least three users simultaneously for a total of 1.3 gigabits per second. Just think about how much data that is. But in addition to supporting MU-MIMO, Wave 2 also doubles the maximum channel bandwidth from 80 megahertz to 160 megahertz, boosting the potential throughput of each stream to 866 megabits per second. It also supports four spatial streams instead of three, boosting the theoretical maximum capacity. Technically, 802.11 AC supports up to eight streams, but the certification program is still at four. Delivering eight streams with these data rates would use a lot of electricity. I'm guessing you could probably heat your house with the way that box would be humming.
So we're finally pushing Gigi on the wireless front, which, you know, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, on top of MU-MIMO, wider channels and more streams, the Wi-Fi Alliance says Wave 2 features now being certified bring, quote, support for a greater number of available channels in 5 gigahertz. A change that makes more efficient use of available spectrum and reduces interference and congestion. You know, basically, the more channels that can be discrete, then the less chance that you're getting interference from somebody who's on the next channel over. Let's see. There have been routers supporting some of these features, but now that it's certified, That should mean that you get ones that you can count on. Wave 2 certification has started with a few products to form a test bed against which other products are tested for interoperability. The test bed products include chips from Broadcom, Marvell, Quintenna, and Qualcomm. They also include a MediaTek reference design for access points. And finally, you know, there was the whole Batman versus Superman thing, and I read a headline. There's some headlines. Didn't read the reviews. You just read the headline. This one, I saw another one where it's a movie review, and the headline is just too good to not mention. Independence Day Resurgence, like a high budget porno minus sex and fun. not a great sign. We talked about that they weren't letting reviewers see the movie in advance. And apparently that's the reason why. It's too bad that, you know, I mean, it's not like the bar is super high. You blow stuff up real good on a global scale and have cool sci-fi fights with humans and aliens, but apparently, it says, prepare yourself for phoned-in dialogue and action set pieces so underwhelming that you'll swear you've turned into a high-budget porno, albeit one that distinctly lacks anything in the way of sex or fun. So, I'm not going to read the rest. You can go to the Geek Radio website and read them if you really want to. But I don't know. I thought I might go see. I wanted to hear what people said. You know, was it just fun? Was it a blew up real good? But it sounds.
I want to
like
see if the aliens are running Mac or Windows. Have you heard?
Oh no! This time I've heard that he hacks them with a Chromebook.
Nice.
Because maybe this time he
cross-site scripting.
No, yeah. He gets into their social media feed and it just totally screws them up. They all crash and
Earth is on vacation back in 2 weeks. Oh, they're not here, man.
I keep getting these later. Emojis and I don't understand what it means.
So did it say anything about even special effects? Is it worth going to see just for the eye candy, or does it fall short in that
well? What happens when the original creator doesn't know how to make that kind of fun happen anymore?
Okay, say no more.
That's when you get Independence Day resurgence. Abandon any hopes for the last film's cheesy yet inspiring President Bill Pullman. Don't get your hopes up for a comically cocky fighter pilot or an abrasive and darkly funny
Quaid was
super
awesome.
Nerd. So Jeff Goldblum is... I'm surprised that he would do it if it was kind of lame, but apparently. So I think one of the problems, and I think one of the things that worked for Independence Day was the story was real simple. You could kind of outline the story in a few sentences. You know, an elevator pitch worked, and they set up. You know, there was the smarmy bureaucrat guy, and the surprises. Oh, there's no we don't know anything about alien technology. What about Area 51? You know, kind of had
data from Star Trek,
kind of campy stuff, and so. They didn't seem to. I think it's one of those movies where you could only make it if you pretended you didn't have that massive budget and you just like wrote it up for fun.
And it was a '90s movie, kind of. You know, Will Smith.
And then you come back and you're trying to do a sequel, and you know exactly, and every executive associated with it knows exactly what's on. We got to turn this into a franchise. It needs to be a tentpole for us, and then. They all are sure about what'll make it a hit. And
how much did they spend? Lots, I'm sure.
$160 million or something, I think.
A lot less than will be spent at the Geek Gathering.
The fun part is finding Dory beat them on opening weekend.
2808 Mile and Madrew is where you want to be Friday, 2 days from now, the first.
Around 7 p.m.
Around 7 p.m. Cones, art, dart. No Dwight, beer, whatever you want. Bring your tech. We'll see you there.
No Jay.
No Jay. So come out. Yep. No one's going to yell at you.
There you go. Or take your picture. All right. Well, you have been listening to Technology Bites. We'll be back next week. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett. And he's
Proofhouse.
So you've been procrastinating? Well, the deadline for board candidacy is June 30th, and on that evening of Thursday the 30th from 5 to 9 p.m., our local election supervisor will be present at the station for last-minute entries into the candidate pool. As well, those of you who've waited until this nearly last moment have an opportunity on Wednesday the 29th from 6 to 8 p.m., where our supervisor will be available, and we'll have not just candidate opportunities and information, but we will also have members of the community who are willing to sign your petition should you choose to engage in this process. And we thank you for doing that, because KPFT needs the best board possible. This is Dwayne Bradley, KPFT General Manager. Please run for the board. The deadline is Thursday, June 30th. Thanks from me and KPFT Houston.
Hello, Houston. This is Funky Larry White, inviting you to the first annual Deadbeat Live. It takes place Saturday, July 9th at Dan Electro's Guitar Bar. And that's at 1031 East 24th Street in the Heights. This KPFT benefit begins at 4 p.m. and features bands such as Boo Hiss, Wild Rabbit Salad, Atomic Nightingales, Boomba Chica, Fallen Folk, Funky Mustard, Lockout Vipers, and Plump. Doors open at 4 p.m. and the requested $10 donation benefits your community radio station. Like the Deadbeat Show, this event features local talent done live. So come out and support live music and KPFT, all with one kind act. We're looking forward to seeing you at Dan Electro's Guitar Bar for the Deadbeat Live on Saturday, July 9th.